Hello and welcome to tonight's edition of KMUD's Public Affairs. In honor and celebration of Pride Month, we will be spending the next hour with independent, award-winning LGBTQ+ journalist Erin Reed. She is the editor and producer of Erin in the Morning, a weekly publication focused on news and discussions on trans legislation and life across the country and beyond. On April 8th of this year, Erin Reed was joined by Queer Humboldt for a presentation at the Humboldt Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Eureka, discussing transgender rights in the USA Today, and provided an overview on how transgender and two-spirit community members have always been here and always will be. Following her talk was a brief Q&A session with community participants. KMUD News is pleased to share the audio from this event for tonight's Public Affairs Special.
For those of you who don't know, my name is Erin Reed. I'm a transgender journalist. I cover all of the trans news and LGBTQ news all over the world. But my partner, my fiance, is Representative Zoe Zephyr in Montana, who stood up against the Montana legislature whenever they attempted to silence her for speaking about all of the anti-trans laws that were happening there. Very rare in history do legislatures kick an elected representative off the floor for using the same language that they have used in the past. But you know what? I love her and she loves me. And together we are stronger, just like the love that all of this queer community shares for one another. It is love and your queer joy that is the most powerful resource that you have. I wasn't planning on talking about any of that, but it's so strong for me. It means so much to me. Before I start, thank you for welcoming me into your wonderful community. I've already hiked in the Redwood Forest. I've seen the ocean. I have traveled all over the country speaking, and I can say that this was one of the most unique and wonderful introductions to a new place that I've ever had. You're all so blessed to be able to live here. So I'm going to talk to you today about all of the laws that I've tracked. I'm going to talk to you about the history that we have, where we are, where we're going, what's going on in the world right now around queer and trans people, and maybe end with a little bit of hope for the future. So first of all, it's important to recognize that we have a history. We have always been here. We are as old as humanity itself. Two-spirit people walked this land long before it was called California. And in fact, a study of the Two-Spirit of Northeastern Society shows that over 63 indigenous tribes in the Americas have had a tradition of Two-Spirit people. And so we have always been here. I'm going to take you all back 4,500 years ago. And there was an author by the name of Inhe Duwana. She was the first named human author, the first time somebody put symbols onto clay tablets and decided to sign their name. And she was writing about the priesthood of Inanna, which was a priesthood of transgender priest priestesses, third gender people, and gender nonconforming priests. So we are literally as old as writing itself. We're now going to travel 2,000 years into the future, and yet we are still 2,000 years ago. There was a transgender Roman empress. That's not what you usually think about. Whenever you think about the leaders of the Roman Empire, you don't think about a trans person literally leading. But Elagabalus was a Roman empress. She referred to herself as queen. She referred to herself with feminine terms. She once told a lover, "Call me not a lord, for I am a lady," and very famously offered vast sums of wealth to any physician in Rome who could give her gender-affirming care. As a trans woman today, that is still the case sometimes. We've always been here. In the 1300s, there was a Jewish poet named Kalonymus ben Kalonymus. And we don't know how Kalonymus would identify today if they were around, but we do have them to thank for the very first description of gender dysphoria. And in their poetry, there's one that they found, and one poem that they found that was just lamenting and you know, begging God and asking God why they had not been born a woman. And you could feel the pain. And I wish I could travel back in time and give Kalonymus estrogen. I can't. But I can give thanks for letting us know that we have always been here. In the 1880s, there was a young Black trans girl by the name of Lucy Hicks Anderson. And she transitioned at the age of 8 years old. She told her parents that she was a girl despite being assigned male at birth. Her parents didn't know what to do. This is the 1800s. And so they brought her to a doctor, and the doctor said, nothing's wrong with her. Let her be. Let her live her life. And so they did. She grew up. She moved to a small California town where she opened a hotel. Everybody in her community loved her. She threw the biggest parties. She was the best cook in town. She could cook the best dishes. And eventually, she was arrested. They brought her to jail. But that is not the end of Lucy Hicks Anderson's story. Because the very next day, the townspeople and a wealthy banker marched down to the jail cell to demand her release because they had been planning a party to throw that night and they needed their cook. She ended up retiring to San Francisco, where she lived a long and quiet life, passed away in the mid-50s with her husband. We've always been here. Now, in the bottom right, you're going to see a black and white picture right here. And it's hard to see. I had previously planned for a projector, so I'm going to describe this a little bit. You'll see a group of transgender women sitting around a table in Berlin, Germany. This was in Weimar, Germany, and they are sitting at the El Dorado. This was a famous club for queer people in Berlin in the 1920s. And these people, they were patients of the Magnus Hirschfeld Institute of Sexology. This was an institute that studied the first 30 years of trans and queer people, hormone therapy, what is with gender identity? Why are people identifying in certain ways? And so a lot of the earliest research into these questions were done by Magnus Hirschfeld. And so whenever I see this picture, I see people that I could recognize in my community. It's queer people whose faces smiling, I could see being in this room. We've always been here. But just as we have always been here, we have always had to fight for our right to exist. There's a picture in the top left of several books burning and people standing around them. And I honestly probably don't need to explain this picture very much in terms of description, because you've probably seen these pictures in your history books. They're in all the history books. They talk about the dangers of book burnings. And a lot of times this picture is used to talk about why we shouldn't censor or freedom of speech. What is so often not talked about is what books they are burning. The books in this picture right here are the first 30 years of research into trans and queer people from the Magnus Hirschfeld Institute of Sexology. It was the first group of books that were rated. 20,000 books in all are in that picture. There are several pictures from this event, and all of them showed the same books being burned. Very famously, Hitler's called Magnus Hirschfeld the most dangerous Jew in Germany. They had a picture of him in the 7th edition of Der Stürmer, which was the Nazi publication at the time, where they essentially accused him of grooming. A lot of things come full circle. We have always had to fight the same fights that we are fighting now. In the 1960s, we had Stonewall. And in fact, even before Stonewall, we had the Compton Cafeteria riots, which in Compton Cafeteria, there were a group of trans sex workers who were arrested because they were in violation of female impersonation laws, essentially drag bans. And so this is how we started getting the raids on the same bars that were then used to lead to the uprising in Stonewall. That is how we got Pride. We've always had to struggle for our right to exist. In the 1980s, AIDS and HIV, people did not declare queer people worth researching for their health care. And so they just let gay people die. It took people standing in the streets, standing in churches, standing in the legislatures, demanding that we had a right to exist. In the 1990s and early 2000s, we had the bans on gay marriage. And we had groups called the ex-gays. They would take them and they would go to legislatures all around the country and say that conversion therapy worked. Being gay was a choice and that they were healed. You'll see a picture of them right here. Interestingly enough, around 90% of the people there have since re-identified as being gay. And many of them have disavowed the movement. They have apologized for their role that they played in it. Things come full circle. We see this today as well. So we're going to talk a little bit more about where we've gone since here. In 2015, we get a major Supreme Court case, Obergefell versus Hodges. We get the right to marry. And I think that a lot of people looked at this Supreme Court case and stepped back and said, we did it. We just won. The gays win. That's not how it worked, though, because the very next year after this ruling, North Carolina banned trans people from bathrooms. Now, this is an interesting one because all of the things that you are seeing right now, all the anti-trans and anti-queer laws that you see right now, this was planned for 2016. All of what we are happening right now, this would have happened in 2017, 2016, 2018. The reason why it did not is because North Carolina bit off more than it could chew. They went immediately towards banning trans people in bathrooms. And very quickly, people realized, oh my God, there's way more trans people than I thought. People were being forced into bathrooms of their assigned sex at birth. And so you had trans men going into women's restrooms. And people were like, oh my God, trans men exist. Prior to that, they didn't really know. And so this was an unmitigated disaster. The NBA All-Star Game pulled out. PayPal pulled out. Deutsche Bank pulled out. They lost $3.7 billion in revenue. And by the time it came to challenge this law in court, the governor didn't even want to. They let it lapse. They didn't even really defend it. And so this set back the anti-trans and anti-queer movement by about 4 years. We would be seeing all this now if that had not happened. In between then, we had a little bit that happened. So in 2018, then President Donald Trump banned trans people from the military, very famously, but also defined trans people out of all legal protections in the federal government. And so we saw, for instance, this applied to the border, where trans asylum seekers were sent back to their origin country and people lost their lives. This was a major issue back in 2018, which then brings us to now, the rainbow scare, what we are seeing today. Before we look at the laws, though, let's talk about why we're seeing trans and queer people in your community. You probably have all noticed that you see more gay people, more trans people, more queer people all around you, more now than ever before. There's a chart that I have up here that shows that it's that way across the board. It's for gay, lesbian, bisexual, trans. All LGBTQ identities are up across the board. And this has led some people to try to explain this by saying that what's actually happening is that this is a mass social contagion, that we are catching the gay from one another. I promise you, whenever you leave this room, if you are not already trans, you're not going to leave the room trans. You're not going to leave and go, I'm going to go and change my gender. That's not how this works. I'm not contagious. Trans people are not contagious. We actually, though, have an alternate explanation if you look back in history. In the early 1900s, if you had asked people, and they did, they surveyed people, what hand you used, if you were left-handed or right-handed, 3.5% of people would say, I'm left-handed. That number shot up to around 13% in 1950, and it stayed stable ever since. There wasn't a mass contagion of left-handedness. You weren't catching left-handedness from one another. What actually happened here is we started making accommodations for left-handed people. They made left-handed tools. They had left-handed desks. In schools, in classrooms, they stopped beating your left hand out of you. And in fact, this is really funny, I did a little bit of research and found out there were parents' rights groups over using your left hand in the 1930s. It's wild. Again, history repeats itself so often. We finally have people feeling free to be themselves. We also finally get trans and queer celebrities. And this is a big deal because prior to 2011, the only representation you would see of a trans person on TV was we were either the victim or perpetrator of a crime, or we were the butt of a joke. Many of you might remember Saturday Night Live. There was an entire little mini series called It's Pat, where the entire butt of the joke was, look, gender nonconforming person. That was it. That was all the representation that we had. We finally started getting representation with Laverne Cox, with Michaela Rodriguez winning Best Actress at the Golden Globes. We see Amy Schneider go on an absolute tear in Jeopardy. That was a big deal. Because let's say that you are a trans teen and your family watches Jeopardy, which is a fairly common thing that families do. Maybe you can look at your parents and say, how are they gendering her? Are they respecting her? And if they were, then maybe you knew that they were safe to come out to. And if they said slurs and they said a bunch of bad things, then maybe you knew that you could hold back for a little bit, and that might be the best thing. And so this helps. Representation matters. We also get a major change in trans care. So the way that I actually got started before I was a journalist and covering all this stuff was I actually mapped out all of the trans healthcare clinics in the country. And it was interesting because prior to doing this, I had to drive an hour or 3 hours into Pottstown, Pennsylvania, a little town in Pennsylvania with a nuclear silo, and I would get my hormones there. It was like the wildest experience. Then I drive 3 hours back. I live in the DC area. And so, you know, there were clinics near me, but I didn't know that because there was no centralized resource. And so I went out there and I mapped all of the clinics. This map has been used 8 million times. I've been really happy about that. I'm almost certain there are people in this room that have probably used it. And so we get a change in how healthcare is accessed. Prior to 2011, we had different standards of care in the World Professional Association of Transgender Health. If you wanted to transition, especially the longer back you go, you would, number one, have to go to a therapist with $20,000 because you had to have your money saved up for surgery. If you didn't want surgery, you could not transition. Moreover than that, if you didn't dress the right way, you couldn't transition. So if I were wearing like a t-shirt or something, they'd be like banned. If you loved the wrong person, you couldn't transition. So for instance, you had to be heterosexual. You had to love somebody that is the other gender, or else you were banned from transitioning. I am obviously engaged to another trans woman, and so I would be barred from transitioning because of that. Thankfully, things changed. We got informed consent healthcare, which allows transgender people to manage their own care, to have their own reproductive freedom, and to basically have their levels safely monitored by doctors. And so that helped people finally find an avenue to transition. So we have more representation. We have more clinics that are available for us. We have more ability to come out and be ourselves. We also get a major court case. Bostic versus Clayton County. This woman right here is Amy Stevens. She's an amazing woman. She sadly passed away before the decision could be rendered. But we have her to thank for so much of our rights right now. She was fired from her job at a funeral home because she was trans, and there were no explicit protections for gender identity prior to that point. And so they brought it to court, and the Supreme Court judged that gender identity discrimination is sex discrimination and therefore banned. Neil Gorsuch wrote the opinion, not a liberal bastion, you know, leader or anything like that, but he wrote the opinion. And this goes to show that, you know, even some of the people who you might think are against us might actually find in our favor. I don't know if this is going to hold up. I don't know in the cases that are upcoming if they are going to hold to precedent. I think a lot of us are very scared of the idea that precedent matters at all in the Supreme Court. But this is something that we had to be thankful for. Which brings us to the last 3 years. The Rainbow Scare. In the last 3 years, I have tracked over 1,000 anti-trans and anti-queer bills across state legislatures all over the United States. They are healthcare bans. They ban trans people from sports. They ban drag, don't say gay laws. I have tracked these on a daily basis. And this is more than all of the years up to 2021 combined. All of the anti-gay legislation and anti-queer legislation, there's less in every year up to 2021 than the last 3 years. We also get really bad media coverage. These are two examples, and I'm going to explain them both. On the left, there is a Reuters article, and it's titled "As More Trans Children Seek Medical Care, Families Confront Many Unknowns." And it was, you know, it was like a both sides piece where they kind of like put a lot of fear in trans care. We get a lot of those in the media. That's not actually what I want to focus on here, though. I want you to look at the picture. You have what looks to be a young kid with braces and a pill on their tongue. And y'all, this is a club drug ad from like the 1980s. It looks like a club drug ad. It's very designed to evoke a very particular feeling in the people who read Reuters. On the right, there's an article, "As Kids, They Thought They Were Trans, Now They No Longer Do." This was a Pamela Paul piece that was just published in the New York Times a couple months ago. And it was 4,500 words long. It took up 2 pages of the New York Times. They will never give a trans person 2 pages in the New York Times. I know, I've tried. And it was filled with, it was like a litany of every single inaccurate thing about trans people that I've ever read over the last 5 years. I've reported on this for 5 years in a row. Luckily, I reported on this for 5 years in a row, so I was able to write up something really, really quickly, and it blew up. My article countering the Pamela Paul article got viewed 5 million times. It actually resulted in Pamela Paul responding back to me in the New York Times, even though the New York Times would not let me respond to her. So we are working in uneven terrain here. I do all that I can as an independent journalist, but we do not have positions of power in the media. We also start getting people moving. And I know that you probably see that here in California. There has been a study recently that shows that over 130,000 to 260,000 transgender people have already fled from their home states. These are places like Florida, Alabama, Utah. They're leaving. And that's 8% of all trans people. There's an additional 1 million that are considering leaving. They're taking their families with them. They're taking their pets with them. They're taking everything with them. This makes this one of the largest migrations in recent history. Again, it's not being covered. Thankfully, the Rolling Stone just finally started to cover this, but you can see them in your community. I'm seeing them in Maryland for sure. So let's talk about the laws. Let's talk about what we're actually seeing in place. So California, it's got a good tally. You know, we've got good gender identity policies, good sexual orientation policies. You have a safe state regulation, which means that if people are fleeing these other states, Attorney General Ken Paxton can't prosecute them across state lines saying, I want all your medical records. He's trying. He actually sent a letter to a children's hospital in Seattle saying that essentially he owns the data on people who live in Texas, even if it happens in Seattle. So this safe state legislation protects that. You've got that. Actually, California was one of the first states to pass safe state legislation. You've got LGBTQ curriculum requirements. You've got exclusion bans on trans coverage. But there are some things happening in California right now. I know that all of you are aware of the ballot initiatives that are going around. They would ban trans people from sports. They would ban trans people from bathrooms in colleges, as well as in high schools and K through 12. And they ban gender affirming care for transgender youth. I am pleased to report that they only found 25%. They hit their 25% number only a few days ago. And they only have about 10 more days to collect signatures. So fingers crossed. But that is something that I know all of you are facing. They brought in Chloe Cole into California specifically to lead that charge. Chloe Cole is a very famous detransitioner, very similar to the ex-gays that I mentioned earlier. In places like Florida, we see driver's license bans where people are being threatened with crimes for getting their driver's license legally changed. You also can be charged with a crime for using the bathroom of your gender identity. And in fact, if I use the same bathroom that I use today in the state of Florida, or that I use in my day-to-day life in the state of Florida, I could be arrested and put in jail for up to a year. So we are seeing very harsh laws. In Texas, they've tried to round up trans kids. They sent out the Child Protective Services across the state to try to find all the trans kids and interrogate them about their care. So we are seeing these harsh laws. We see a lot of drag bans. That's something we see very commonly. They define drag as using elaborate makeup or clothing to signify gender while performing. Congratulations, you just banned Dolly Parton. You just banned glam rock, the Dallas Cowboys cheerleading squad, pro wrestling. Actually, here's one that's really interesting. They defeated this law in Arkansas. You know how they did it? One of the Democrats said, hey, this law is going to ban Hooters. And suddenly all of the Republicans on the committee dropped the bill. This actually happened. I cover all this. I've reported on that whenever it happened. So yeah, we see these very broadly defined drag bans. This map right here, I'm a big person on maps. I do a lot of maps. Maps are where I got started. This is a list of all of the states. If you see it in blue, those are states that ban extraditing trans people. They ban out-of-state prosecutions. These are places where they have declared that gender-affirming care is protected. Interestingly enough, most of these states also passed this law protecting abortion and birth control and reproductive freedom, because these are two sides of the same coin fought by the same people using the same rationale. It's all over control over your body, and all trying to control your body by making it so that you should only be in service of a patriarchy that seeks to subjugate women and trans people, all to uphold its power. This map right here is a map of places that have healthcare equity. So, you know, we always think that we live in blue states, everything's good, right? Unfortunately, there are only four states in the United States that mandate coverage for all transgender healthcare. So we're talking everything. We're talking top surgery, bottom surgery. We're talking hormone therapy, hair removal. A lot of places exempt a lot of different kinds of care. There are only four places that have it all covered. That's Washington State, Colorado, Hawaii, and Maryland was the fourth state that just happened this year. So healthcare access equity is a big issue. A lot of times, people can't afford hair removal, for instance. Hair removal for trans people can cost up to $20,000 in some circumstances. And so, you know, it's a big deal whenever you can get this covered. This map right here is a map of sports bans in the United States. And now sports bans are a loaded and contentious topic sometimes, to be sure. But let me explain to you how these sports bans are actually being enforced. In the state of Utah, we had a cisgender basketball player accused of being trans by a public official, which kicked off a giant investigation into all of her records going all the way back to preschool. She was cisgender. A lot of times, the parents on the losing teams are now accusing people on the other team of being trans, leading to similar investigations. And the sports that we are seeing these sports bans happen in are things like women's darts, disc golf, fishing. That's a new one. Okay, I promise you, if I attach an estrogen pill at the end of my line and cast it out, the fish are not going to come biting. It does not work that way. We see bans in beauty pageants. In Italy, very recently, they banned all transgender women from participating in beauty pageants, and there have been similar calls for things like that in the United States. They're literally arguing, I guess, that trans people have a natural advantage at being pretty. Well, I mean, we even see bans in the incredibly athletic and gendered sport of chess. The International Chess Organization very recently said that transgender women have no right to compete in women's chess. Let's interrogate this a little bit, okay? Because, like, what they are literally saying here is that transgender women have a biological advantage of being smart, but that's actually not what they're saying. What they are saying, because the way that they view trans women as men, and so they will say literally that they believe that men are inherently smarter. That is where all of this centers on. It is very heavy in misogyny and patriarchy. And let me tell you, they've done studies on gender differences in chess scores. It has nothing to do with intelligence. It has everything to do with the fact that women are often kept out of chess from an early age. And so whenever you control for that, it all goes away. We are seeing these sports bans applied in very weird ways. This is a map of Don't Say Gay bills. Don't Say Gay bills are a big thing in the United States right now. I've covered a lot of them. Book bans, we see bans on talking about your spouse. In South Carolina, a teacher got fired for mentioning her gay spouse. In Florida, a teacher was fired for playing a Disney movie that had a gay character in it. We see bans on books. That's a really common one that's happening right now all across the United States. And in a certain place in Georgia, there was a school board that fired a teacher for reading a book off of the Scholastic book list that they had provided called My Shadow is Purple. It was literally about a kid with a purple shadow being different. We do see bans on books very heavily right now.
You have it tuned to KMUD in Garberville. We have been spending the last 30 minutes with independent, award-winning LGBTQ+ journalist Erin Reed of Erin in the Morning. We want to thank our partner, Queer Humboldt, for sharing this audio from her recent speech at the Humboldt Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Eureka from April.
This is a list of states with bans on gender-affirming care for transgender youth, a very common thing as well. And we are seeing continual attacks on your ability to access healthcare. It's not just trans youth. In many of these places, it's also trans incarcerated adults. That's becoming a really common one. They are detransitioning people who are arrested. So let's say you're a trans woman in Florida and you get arrested in a bathroom. They'll pull you off your hormones and detransition you. It's horrifying in Florida right now. And then many of you, if you read my work, I pinned this map at the top of my list. This is a map of my risk assessment for every state. And the risk assessment right here is for adults. So this, you can see there's a lot of difference here. Florida is in black. It has a do not travel advisory. And that's not just my own advisory. A few other organizations put out do not travels for Florida. For trans people, it can be very dangerous if you're not aware of what the laws are in Florida. And then, you know, you'll see the gambit. So you'll see places like Tennessee, Kansas, where they are reversing people's driver's licenses. Then you'll see on the other end, you'll see some of the bluer states where they have passed all those protections that I talked about before. Now this is the adult map. This is the one for youth. And it's sad because whenever I first started making these maps, I did not have an adult map because they weren't targeting adults at the beginning. It was never about the kids. It was never about sports. It was never about bathrooms. It was always about eradication. That's what it was always about. There was no adult map, and the youth map used to look like this. Now, unfortunately, several states on the youth list have gone downhill with very harsh regulations and bans. Which brings me to the judicial fight, where we see what's going on in the courts right now, because that's going to be a big question. Where is this all heading judicially? So very recently, we did get a Supreme Court case. And unfortunately, it did not go in our favor, but it didn't go entirely not in our favor either. In Idaho, they allowed the gender-affirming care ban to continue. However, they said that it could not be enforced against the two main plaintiffs. And this decision was interesting because it was actually not about transgender care. It was actually about something a little bit more dangerous. It was about the ability of courts to ban laws, to block laws. And we are seeing time and time again, they're using attacks on minorities like trans people, like queer people, like disabled people to undermine the legitimacy of democracy itself. I certainly saw this with my fiance, Zoe, who was literally silenced on the House floor for speaking about anti-trans legislation. However, very recently, we did just get a ruling in the Fourth Circuit saying that gender identity is a protected characteristic. Now, I want to say this was really interesting. North Carolina and West Virginia, they tried to argue that they were not discriminating against trans people because they're banning gender-affirming care for everyone. The judge saw right through that. The judge said, oh, that's like saying that you're not discriminating against gay people because you're banning gay marriage for everyone. Okay, yeah, so like maybe you are, maybe not every gay person's gonna get married, but it's very clear who you're targeting here. It's proxy discrimination. And so thankfully, that's gonna be a major precedent as this fight goes into the Supreme Court. We recently got a federal Title IX decision that was a really important one that says that Title IX applies to trans people. Florida's Don't Say Gay law, a big portion of it was just blocked. They tried to force a transgender woman to go by Mr. in class. Thankfully, that was barred. Montana, you know, very close state, near and dear to my heart. Their fight, actually, this is a really interesting one. The gender-affirming care ban was overturned in the state constitution. And here's how they did it. This was fascinating. Just a month before they passed the gender-affirming care ban, the Montana legislature passed a right to try experimental medication specifically designed to protect ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. Anti-COVID, you know, hoax cures. And all the Republicans had jumped in and said, well, we're going to protect the right to try experimental medication. And then they called trans care experimental and banned it. So the judge said, well, hold on here. You just played yourself. And the judge threw out the law. We saw something similar happen in Ohio. I don't know if I have Ohio on here. I don't think I do. But in Ohio, the current ban on transgender care there is currently blocked because they used a 2011 constitutional amendment in Ohio that says that you have a right to not be penalized or prohibited from health care and health insurance. It was specifically designed to combat Obamacare whenever they were trying to make the penalty for not getting health insurance. Like, they passed a constitutional amendment. It didn't actually do anything to Obamacare. And then come full circle, It's a constitutional amendment, so it protects trans healthcare in Ohio. Again, we see this time and time again. So let's talk a little bit about intersectionality here. So we talked a lot about trans people so far, and I want to talk about how we actually connect to the wider fight and a lot of other fights. So number one, we look at reproductive healthcare. That's a huge one. And in fact, I said earlier that these are two sides of the same coin, the same fight, and they see it that way too. Immediately after the Dobbs decision, allowing for abortion to be banned, they had a statement in that decision. It's called the Glucksberg test. And the statement is that a right is not a right unless it is deeply rooted in America's history and traditions. Now think about that for a second, because imagine the atrocities you can get away with that. There's a lot of bad things that are deeply rooted in American history and traditions, racism, slavery, indigenous genocide. We see a whole lot of horrible things. And there's a lot of things that we really value now that are not as deeply rooted. And so they use this statement to say, well, trans care is not deeply rooted in this nation's history and traditions. And that's how in Alabama they were able to keep the law. We also see definitions of sex that are very reductive. They define female, for instance, as an individual whose biological reproductive system is developed to produce ova. And I mean, you literally define people out that have had hysterectomies, define people out that were not born with reproductive capability, you define out intersex people and trans people. So we see, again, connections with the reproductive healthcare fight very heavily. And we also see it with birth control. The same arguments right now are being used against birth control. They are trying to say that birth control has negative effects and that kids are too young to be on birth control. So under 18, you should be banned. In fact, Elon Musk very recently said, hormonal birth control makes you fat, doubles your risk of depression, and triples your risk of suicide. This is the clear scientific consensus. They're using the same fights and rationale, and it's ridiculous, but this is exactly how we're going to see this applied. We also see large overlaps of disability rights. This is a really this is a really big one. In the top left, this is a newspaper clipping of the fight for the Americans with Disabilities Act in 1990. And this was a historic Pride Day where trans and queer people fought along with disabled people to fight for the ADA. We got the ADA. 30 years later, we get a Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals decision that says that gender dysphoria should be protected under the ADA, which might be a whole new avenue to overturn anti-trans laws. It has not even been fully tested yet. So whenever we talk about intersectionality, we're not just talking about a buzzword here. These fights often come full circle. Indigenous rights is a big one. And I spoke earlier about my fiance, about Zoe, how she was banned from the House floor. The very first person to speak in her defense on the legislative floor was Representative Wendy Boy, a representative from the American Indian Caucus in Montana. I'm going to play his speech real quick.
In my community, and to some tribes, we call them two-spirit people. My late uncle, who was one of my teachers, one of my mentors in my way of life, has always told me one thing to keep in mind, that no matter who we are, that we are all equal under the eyes of Almighty. And always remember, he said, when you point your finger at somebody, look how many is pointing back. And so when you take that into context, that with this thing here that's before us, there's a lot of events that happen, and not only in this body, but over in the body of the Senate in the last 21 years, as well as the 21 years and 11 sessions I've seen here. This is nothing compared to some of the events that occurred, that we're making this as egregious as they are. We had a Democrat leader that sat right in that third row there, fourth row, almost go fisticuffs with the representative on the other party, on the other side over there. And the Great Falls Tribune even has pictures in the gallery that had them going at it. That was uncalled for. That was so much unrest here.
I'm going to pause there. So what he's speaking about is there were, in Montana, there were cases where people literally almost fought with fists in the legislature and nobody was kicked off the floor. It was only whenever a trans woman decided to say, this hurts my community, that she was kicked off the floor. We actually saw immediately after this, another representative from the American Indian Caucus in Montana said outright, this is fascism. You've done this to us. You're doing this to her. And we see that solidarity that builds between marginalized communities. Because let me tell you, trans people, we're a small group. We're not big. We don't take up much space. We're 1-2% of the American public, and that's being generous. But if we are going to be able to fight this fight effectively, you got to have friends. And you got to stand up for your friends. And there's one thing that we've always been good at doing within the trans community and queer community, it's standing up for our friends. We got a long history of that. I don't know what's going to happen in the next 4, 8, 10 years. I don't know if we're going to see mass bans on trans healthcare or not. But I do know that the history of being trans, the history of being queer, and the history of solidarity with all these other movements is not just surviving in the margins, but thriving in the margins by looking out for one another. One of my most favorite pictures from Stonewall was not of the riots. It was of the day after. There's a really famous picture, I don't even have it on my presentation here, of all of the people that were fighting in Stonewall standing in front of the board at Stonewall Inn smiling, holding each other's hands and smiling. And think about how hard things were back then. You were literally being arrested for being gay back then. And they found that solidarity with one another. I don't think that any law is ever going to be able to wipe us out. It's impossible to. We're part of what it means to be human. Intersectionality also intersects with racial justice. And in fact, in BLM, many of the founders of BLM were also queer. And lastly, I want to talk about what activism looks like, what it looks like to then come from this space and do something. So a lot of times, activism and what we think about fighting back, you think about many of the things I talked about already, the standing up in the streets, the going into the legislators, into the legislatures and speaking. That's important. And for some people, that's going to be your best bet. That's going to be your best way of being strong and making change. But also, one of the strongest forms of activism is joy. It really is. You can change the world. Your queer joy is the most powerful thing that you have. I think about this one phone call that I got a year and a half ago. It was from a young trans girl. She was 17 years old. She lived in Louisiana. I am originally from Louisiana. I come from the swamps in Louisiana. And 20 years ago, as a young queer kid, it was very hard. I was heavily bullied. It was just a very rough environment for me. And she called me and she said, "Hey, Erin, I watch your TikToks. I love your work. I love reading your work. I'm 17 years old. I go to this school," and it was a school about 15 miles from where I grew up. I knew it. It's also a very harsh place from what I remember. And she said, "And I just want to let you know, I was nominated to the homecoming court." And I cried. Because, like, here is this girl that's not only accepted by her community, but being celebrated and loved in a place where I was just relentlessly beaten down. That's change. That is more change than anybody standing in a courtroom could ever do. Because that is changing hearts and minds. This picture right here is of her dad driving her in a convertible around the football stadium, and she's waving at everybody. That's how we change things. If you like to produce art, if you like to produce music, you like to write, if you're a good friend who everybody turns to, if you've got great music recommendations, if you know a good local hike, like the one I took earlier, sometimes if that is how somebody gets to know you, not through just you as a trans person, but your whole self, you bring your whole self into your life, then sometimes if they then learn, oh, and by the way, the person who made this amazing video game Celeste was trans. The person who made this really amazing catchy song that you're listening to, by the way, they're trans. That's how you change things. You bring your whole self into your life. And in fact, this is classic speech and debate 101, cognitive dissonance. You connect with somebody on a different level than the thing that you're trying to change their minds on. And then all of a sudden, They now discover that they can like something that a queer or a trans person has made or done. And then maybe that is how they then change their opinions about everything else about you. I truly think that one of the strongest things that everybody can do is sometimes you feel the weight of the activism when you think that you got to go do something more, you got to go march or something, and that is important. But like, go do something you love. Go do something that you love. Be that whole, bring your whole self into your life. It's so important. Next steps for all of you, if you want some just solid things to do next, you can always read my newsletter at erininthemorning.com. I keep up with all of these laws all over the United States. I'm constantly tracking them. Follow your local LGBTQ orgs. Very, very important. I know that there are some here. Look local. Local activism is so important. I know that a lot of times, especially like if you want to know who you want to donate to or something like that, there's a big draw to like donate to HRC or something. HRC and GLAAD have all the money that they need. And I know people in GLAAD, I know people in HRC, some of them are doing really good work, but the people that really need the money are your local orgs, your local ones that are directly interfacing with the trans and queer people in your community. Often they are so underfunded. Change your media diet. There is a documentary, if you have not watched it, I highly recommend you watch it. It's called Disclosure on Netflix, and it is incredible. It talks about how so much of all of our preconceptions about what being trans is comes from our media diet and what we grew up with. Read trans content, read trans books, read, you know, listen to trans musicians, watch trans content creators. There are people doing amazing work out there. Get to know your local and your state level representatives, stay active in your professional societies. And lastly, find the room that you know that you can do the most good in. All of you are going to be asked to do something with trans people one day. You might hear somebody say something bad. You might find out that your local workplace might have a question about which health insurance to pick. You might have a question about which bathroom a trans person in your community is gonna use. You will know what that room is whenever you're in it. But whenever you do find yourself tasked with being able to improve the lives of the marginalized people in your community, make that step. Anyway, thank you so much for having me. This has been an incredible audience. You've got an incredible place, and I've loved every bit of this. I'll be here to answer questions, but thank you so much for having me, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you for coming. And I'm curious, what do you wish cisgender people would do more of or do more of this?
That's a really good question. You know, I think that so often cisgender people occupy very important places of power. And you don't really maybe even realize what those places are, but they're places that trans people are often not given the opportunity. I mentioned for me, in my particular role, that's journalism. For me, that's being able to write in the New York Times, being able to write in the Washington Post. But there's many other areas of life where that's not the main thing. You know, maybe it's not journalism, maybe it's, you know, helping make healthcare decisions for your company. That's a really common one. There's a lot of companies out there that make a lot of healthcare and health insurance choices, and not everyone is very good for trans people. And a lot of times they're shut out from those decision-making processes. I think that just trying to be cognizant of those spaces where you hold power and trying to maybe expand that room, open the door a little bit for the queer and trans people that are around you, that's really important. The other thing that I'll also say is that, you know, don't be silent. I think that that's a big one. Especially right now, there's a lot of misinformation being thrown around about trans people. And I think that a lot of times, you know, maybe there are people that are supportive but really quiet. And maybe like if you hear somebody say something really bad about a trans person, you're like, speak up, just say something. The last thing, and I think for me, it's the most important thing, it's sort of the purpose of my work, is learn, get educated about trans people. I write my newsletter, I release it almost every day. I write with the target audience of people who don't know much about trans people in mind. And you will always note, if you watch my TikToks, if you read my newsletters, I will write and I'll explain, like, I'm not gonna leave any concept undefined. I'm not gonna leave anything to where, oh, you must already know about this really in-depth topic about, you know, the molecular physics of gender identity in order to read or understand my work. And in fact, one of the reasons why, and I've gotten messages about this a lot, one of the reasons why a lot of people like my TikTok, especially a lot of like trans teens, is that they'll take my videos and they'll show them to their parents so that they can help them understand, like, hey, this is what's going on. This is what I feel. This is what my options are. This is what's going on in my state. And I explain it that way specifically, knowing that there are going to be parents that read this. And so those are my three things, I think. And those are good three starts. Read my newsletter, you know, like jump on. It's free to subscribe. You know, you can jump on and just like read everything. I don't paywall anything. So there's another one back there. Hi.
Do you have a little more context for when the trans-inclusive healthcare was getting better? What years those were, and what do you think led to that more inclusive state of healthcare?
Yeah, so 2011 to 2013, two big things happened. There were big pushes to depathologize being trans. So no longer was being trans a mental disorder. It was gender dysphoria was a symptom that could be potentially alleviated by transition. And I think that, you know, in that era, in the 2011 time period, we're talking like post-Obama election, we're talking about, I think, pre the run-up to the gay marriage fight, there was a lot of intentional attempts at understanding LGBTQ people. And that was going on at the time. And I think that that helped. I really do. I think that it helped people understand that, like, okay, so queer people exist, trans people exist. We already know that gay people are not mentally disordered. Trans people are not either. And that led to some major changes. And I think that there was, I think, a lot of energy back then to make those changes just within society. We saw that was the zeitgeist of the time back then. And so in 2011, the DSM-5 released. It was first edited in 2011, finally came out in 2013. And it basically changed being trans as not a mental disorder. And then WPATH came in and said, okay, we're going to allow more trans people to get their healthcare, because the first study started coming out showing that, oh my God, if you don't give trans people their healthcare, it reduces their mental state very heavily. It causes depression, anxiety, suicidality. So that's when all the studies were coming out. And it was a kind of a big mixture of all of that. Now we are, you know, 12, 13 years down the line, and there have been 100 more studies saying the same thing, but we're in a reactionary moment now. And I think that that reactionary moment is happening in a very similar way to how the climate change fight happened. There's this idea of like manufacturing disinformation and creating false uncertainty. And that was heavily done in the early 2000s to basically deny, it was climate denialism. And we are seeing a very similar tactic being used right now about transgender people, where no study that you put out is going to be good enough for the people that want to ban our care. I have done extensive research on this, and thankfully there have been others that have done extensive research on this too. The Southern Poverty Law Center did a very good deep dive into the web of funding and the web of how these sources are funded. It looks like one of the biggest funders is the Koch brothers. We're looking at Heritage Foundation funding streams, where the Koch brothers are donating to Heritage, to ADF, and then to a side group that then donates to all of the GenSpec, SEGM, all of the other anti-trans orgs that we're seeing nationally. There's also another stream, not just the Koch brothers, there's another stream of revenue that comes from the Catholic Church right now. It's the Catholic Medical Association is a major one internationally right now. And so they are laundering this money through like side orgs. And then those side orgs are creating organizations that are meant to sound professional, but they're not. Let me give you a really good example. There's an organization called the American College of Pediatricians. And Fox News will say the American College of Pediatricians says trans healthcare is bad. Doctors wearing their white coats that belong to the American College of Pediatricians will show up at the hearings and say, trans healthcare is bad. The American College of Pediatricians is fakely named to confuse them with the American Academy of Pediatrics. The American Academy of Pediatrics is the big 60, 70,000 person professional society. The AC PEDS is a 200 person conversion therapy group. They do this that way. That's how they do this. And this is not just happening in the United States. This is international. The Alliance Defending Freedom has very famously internationally tried to put its hands in other laws, very famously in Uganda, we had the Kill the Gays law, and that was specifically being lobbied by some of the same people that did work here in the United States. And so, you know, the last thing I'll say is, I've read 1,000 anti-trans bills, I often say that, but I've really only read 30, because it's the same copy and pasted bill in all these different legislatures. They're not coming organically from within the legislature. And in fact, almost, I have watched, you know, thousands of hours of hearings. I have yet to watch a single hearing where there were more anti-trans people that spoke than there were people in favor of transgender rights. Even moreover than that, most of the hearings that I watch, not a single person speaks against trans people at the hearings. It's mind-blowing. I've seen 500 line up to speak against an anti-trans law, and 2 stand up on the other side. That happened very recently in Texas. This is not organic. It's not coming organically. You poll people. There's a recent poll that said, how much do you care about this issue? And it was ranked, they actually had to combine it with wokeness because both of them almost got no votes in the poll at all. So it's a very good question.
I have one more. I know you've spoken about the hate that can come towards you as a visible trans person, death threats even in the last few days. And I know one thing that we always wrestle with is how much attention to bring to those aspects of our experience, and the pros and cons of bringing attention to those. And I'm curious how you navigate that.
I often don't bring a lot of attention to that, you know, because I think that's what they want in a lot of cases. They want to disrupt my life. And they want to disrupt a lot of queer and trans people's lives. That's why Libs of TikTok exists. That's why bomb threats follow every time she posts about a single teacher with eye makeup. Like, we see these constant attempts to disrupt queer and trans lives. I'm not going to give them, I don't think, that pleasure. I think that for me, I understand that I am in this space because I want the people that come after to not have to do this. We are building a world where the future generations will not have to go through what we're going through right now. And I live in a world, and all of you live in a world, that we don't have to go through what was going on in the 1960s or the 1930s. And I'm not going to let that happen, not whenever I'm still around, as long as I still got breath in my body. You know, things are scary in a lot of places right now. History does repeat itself. We also have lessons to learn from history, and I think that we stand on the shoulders of the giants. So yeah, death threats and things like that comes with the job sometimes, especially as a journalist reporting on a contentious topic, but I am undeterred. Yeah, censorship on social media platforms is a huge deal right now. Oh God, as a trans person, I mean, we've got Elon Musk literally censoring the word cisgender right now. If you type in the word cisgender, you could have your account potentially blocked for a little bit. It's ridiculous. Now, remember, Twitter is the freedom of speech platform. They literally have open Nazis, but God forbid somebody say cis. You know, cis was a word that was actually first used in ancient Rome, where they were describing cisalpine Gaul and transalpine Gaul, meaning on this side or on the other side. That's where the word cis comes from. Cis is used in chemistry. We have cis isomers and trans isomers. So yes, censorship exists. TikTok ban is, in my opinion, a very terrible thing for what I do, because a lot of people depend on the information that I put out there. And I don't think that it will uphold in court. I think that the TikTok ban will go down in court. A lot of people are going to lose a major resource if TikTok goes away. For all the problems that TikTok has, and trust me, I have a lot of problems with TikTok. The company itself, but the app itself, is a crucial source of information for a lot of people.
We're going to ride with it and the support, and what we do now, we talk about our son and all of his accomplishments, teaching, and so forth. And it makes it more normal in groups of people.
Yeah, and I think that that's important. I think that not only just talking about your son, and by the way, thank you for being an accepting parent. A lot of people don't have that. I don't have that. But also, like, surrounding yourselves with people who are different. I think that it's important. You're in a good space here. I could tell that you're in a good space here. And that's important to coming to terms with your own thoughts about gender identity and like all the things that we all grow up with. We all grow up with different things that are programmed into our heads that we learn that sometimes might not have been the right thing. And sharing space with others who are different, like in here, is really important.
Thank you, Erin.
Thank you so much, everyone.
That concludes tonight's Public Affairs Special, where we spent the entire hour with award-winning, independent, LGBTQ+ journalist Erin Reed, editor and producer of Erin in the Morning, a weekly publication focused on news and discussions of queer and trans legislation and life across the country and beyond. To hear the audio in full, you can visit soundcloud.com/KMUDNews. On behalf of all of us here at Redwood Community Radio, happy Pride Month.